You're listening to the Fairways People podcast, where we share inspiring stories, meaningful conversations, and the voices behind our charity. Each episode offers a closer look at the people and passion that drive us. Hosted by Fairways Managing Director, Gareth Webb.
Hello everyone, so welcome to another Fairways People podcast. So I'm Gareth Webb, the Managing Director of Fairways. And for our podcast today, we have the one and only Wayne O'Cow MBE, our Director of Talent and Performance. Welcome, Wayne.
Hello, thank you.
Thanks for coming in today. So, let's give a little bit of background on you, Wayne. So you've been you've been with Fairways for around 8 years, is that right?
Yeah.
And you've had a variety of roles in Fairways. You've had a great career. You originally joined as a Deputy Director of Training and HR, whereby you took over HR, you remodelled it, you recruited in a head of HR and you handed this over. And then after that, you stepped up to the Director of Talent and Performance. And under this role, you've had a variety of different roles that you've supported different functions, which includes HR, the Training and Workforce Development Department, our Therapeutic Hub, and our Outdoor Adventure Centre in Wales. And most recently, you've back in and focused on our Talent and Performance Strategy, which links to our People Strategy. So, also, you are also taking lead on our trauma-informed strategy, which includes the design, planning and implementation of our very own RISE programme. And now you're more looking at currently developing our own model of care, our trauma-informed model of care. Also know, Wayne, you've had an extensive career outside of Fairways in the military for around 30 years. And you found your way into Fairways probably in, again, quite a unique way. And should I say, not the normal process of applying for a role and being interviewed, but we'll come on to that later. So you're currently the Director of Talent Performance. You've got two direct reports. You've got a team of around 8 staff that you manage and oversee.
Yeah.
There's also a part of your role. You've developed and supported and implemented all of our bespoke leadership programs over the years, which have been crucial in developing our senior leaders and ensuring that we deliver the best outcomes for our individuals in our care. And finally, it's like doing program. This is your life.
Yeah. Was that Eamon Andrews?
Yeah. And finally, you're a massive fan of rugby. Many years of playing and coaching some of the best rugby teams in the country. So there's lots to look into there. Really interesting.
Yeah.
But let's start from the beginning. So let's learn a little bit about your childhood and where you grew up.
Yeah. Okay. So, I grew up in this very affluent, cosmopolitan town in the northwest of England called Lee. And if you know Lee, it's not cosmopolitan, but it's not very affluent either, you know. So, but I think more than anything, I've reflected on this over the years. I think particularly comes to Fairways, you know, Gareth, because you get asked a lot and people are interested in, you know, what it was like growing up for you, you know, how you wired in certain ways, where did this come from, you know, and there's this, it seems like a natural curiosity across the workforce for this. And obviously, if you understand childhood attachment and everything else, and the things like ACEs, you know, and adverse experiences that people have had, you can understand why. So I grew up in a coal mining town called Lee, which was a very colourful town back in the day, let's say. Well, it still is now, actually. But I just think I was very lucky. You know, I grew up within a couple of communities, which is, I think it's really stayed with me. You know, I grew up in a, first of all, a coal mining community. One of the clubs I played for was Lee Miners. You know, the club was built, you know, hand built by miners. You know, and then a variety of other communities. You know, close by. You know, like my dad had a gym, as well as a haulage business, and that he was involved in. But you know, that whole fitness community as well, and a really good community of friends. You know, that I'm still in touch with today. I had and still have some incredible, you know, friends up north.
So you grew up in Lee.
Yeah.
Is that near Hull? I'm not very good.
No, that's not
near Hull at all.
No, other side.
Okay, other side.
So that's so in Lancashire.
Right, yeah. Lancashire, sorry. Yeah. My geography's not
bit of rivalry.
Lancashire and Yorkshire. Okay, didn't say that. So what So did you the normal? Did you go to school? Did you go to college? How did you?
Yeah, I went to. So it was in the days when you used to have like the grammar schools and the comprehensive schools. As it turns out, in Leigh, they had one right next to each other. The only thing that separated it was a set of railings, and it was like, can you imagine chaos every single night, yeah. You know, and every morning. And then they decided to integrate both schools, which was just even more chaos. So that became Bedford High School, which was one of the biggest schools in the northwest of England. And that's the school I went to. And we produced an incredible amount of professional rugby league players from that school. You know, it was Leigh's a hotbed for rugby league. And you know, the amount of professionals and internationals that we produced at that school was just incredible.
So you went to that school,
yeah.
And then I know I've touched on you've had an extremely successful career in the Navy in, you know, 30 years. So I'm guessing did you join straight from school? Or?
No, I didn't. I went to college, and for some reason, you know, I really didn't know what I was going to do when I was leaving school. And I, you know, it's one of those lessons that I've kind of picked up for my kids and I've discussed with my kids so many times. I didn't have a plan. I went to college and I just joined some random course, and it was like some electronics course. And the only thing I was good at on that electronics course was basketball. And I'm like 5 foot and a fag packet. So, you know, I'm not really, you know, it's not really the kind of sport for me in a sense, but I love the, you know, we had a PE teacher and he just used to play basketball the whole time. And that's the only thing I was attracted to. And I just didn't like the rest of the course. So I quickly looked for another, you know, another role. And then I got a role as a training engineer working for a company called Subsoil Surveys. So, you know, before you're going to build anything, whether it be a bridge, you know, roads, anything in construction, you know, you would normally test, you know, what's in the subsoil and whatnot. And yeah, I did that for a couple of years. And then I was delivering a report in Manchester one day, and it was raining. I just parked my van up. I think I was, 18 at the time, 19 I was actually, and I stood in the doorway of the Navy Careers Office, which I didn't even realise, and there was an old guy smoking a pipe that basically enticed me in. And then within the space of, well, I made my mind up really quickly actually, within the space of 30 minutes, I'd more or less signed up to join the Navy, and then literally I was in within a couple of months.
Oh, wow.
You know, okay. So, which it doesn't work that way these days, you know, no. But, yeah.
So it wasn't planned?
No, it wasn't planned. My dad was not happy.
Was he not?
Absolutely not happy. He said, like, you're about a year away from becoming a qualified engineer with a degree, but I'll come on to that further.
Okay.
There's a reason behind that. And he just could not understand why I was going to, you know, run away to sea.
Okay. So you took the decision to join the Navy. What did you join as? How does it work like that? Did you have to choose your profession when you...
Yeah. So I joined as an engineer, and we'll come to that straight away. So So my first engineering officer was a guy called... Well, he was a lieutenant at the time, but he went on to become... He was very successful, went on to become the second Sea Lord, Sir Jonathan Woodcock, OBE. And Sir Jonathan Woodcock... or Lieutenant Woodcock as it was back then. I was quite a colourful character, you know, in the first couple of years on board. And I used to get up to all sorts, you know, around Sir Jonathan and whatnot. And I remember him saying to me one day, "O'Kell, you are the absolute worst engineer the Royal Navy's ever had." I said, "Thank you." And then he said, but honestly, what you want to do is like you wasted, you should become a physical training instructor, you know. And and then he said, "Anything I can do to get you out of the engineering branch," you know. Really, I kind of set my sights on that early, and then left the engineering branch, thankfully, and became a physical training instructor.
Oh wow! I didn't realise. I always thought you joined as a PTI. That's interesting.
No.
Oh, okay.
You never used to have direct entry for the Navy, but I believe they do now. I think in the last year or so.
So you stepped into PTI.
Yeah.
Then, I guess then you stayed doing that sort of role positioned?
Yeah. So you, in those days, you were just like a general PT. And then I was really lucky, I think, that I... Well, I think the first thing was... I actually go back to the Gulf War in 1987. So we sailed. Iran, Iraq was at war at the time. We sailed, and I remember thinking, 6 months in the Persian Gulf, fantastic. You know, I was just leaving a rugby league season behind, which was playing week in, week out, you know, and and then I was going to spend 6 months floating around on a grey box on the ocean, you know, with anti-flash on, hood and gloves and a helmet on, you know. So, so I really wasn't looking forward to it. And then two guys, and I think this really did change my life. It was like that kind of sliding doors moment. We were in the mess one day. I got a knock on the door, and they said, "Oh, there's two guys at the door wanting to see you." So I went to the door, and it's two really well-respected senior aides at the door. You know, big names on board. A guy called Mick Marsh and a guy called Tim Blogg. And I was always in awe of these guys, you know. And they went, "Right, have you got 2 minutes?" So I was like, I thought I was in trouble, to be honest. Yeah. So we went and stood on the quarter deck, and they basically said, "What are you going to do for the next 6 months?" I said, "Not really, no." So they said, we've got something we want to offer you. You've got potential. You come and train with us every day. If we go ashore, you go ashore. You don't go ashore with your mates too often because you'll get in trouble. And we want to put you on this path." So I signed up for it instantly. Didn't realise how tough or demanding it was going to be. And literally, it was every single day, you know. And I was exposed to all manner of, you know, adversity, but also some good times as well. But I just had these two guys that basically looked after me, ensured, you know, that I walked a good path. And got me involved in all sorts of stuff. I mean, you know, like one of the things was, I always remember we had this horse racing night on the flight deck, you know, 250 ships company. We're in the middle of the Persian Gulf, and then Mick and Tim both say, "And you're going to compare this for us." You know, I'm like the most junior guy on board. But it, really early on, I learned from that, you know, the confidence I developed from stuff like that. And then it snowballed, and then I think they probably regretted it in the end. Like, you know, I was volunteering for everything, and, "Well, I'll do that. Yeah, give that to me," you know. And yeah. And I always had like a microphone either in my back pocket or close at hand, like, you know. So
still do.
So yeah.
So what do you think made them choose you then, gravitate towards you?
I don't know. I mean, I was playing rugby for the ships team, and bear in mind, I'm a rugby league player. You know, I'm so passionate about rugby league. It's unbelievable. It's, you know, waking moments every day, I'm always thinking about rugby league, and you know, going to play rugby union with them, and then suddenly possibly playing in a different way, having a different kind of language, being a northern lad as well, was, you know, and I do know that I can be a bit of a cheeky character at times, so I would imagine they've probably seen that, you know, from an early stage, you know, 19 years old, and then thought, "We're possibly going to invest in this lad," you know, and I'm so thankful they did, you know.
Okay, interesting. So, I guess you've had a variety of roles in the Navy, yes?
Yeah.
Just talk me through sort of some of the roles you've.
So I was lucky in terms of, one of the things I learned from them too was, and then another guy, you know, pretty early on in my career, was to never go to the same place twice. And what I mean by that is, the military, particularly the Navy, I think is fantastic in terms of your role can change every 3 years. So it's like broadening, you know, you become very adept at a role quite quickly, and then your role changes, and then you've got to go through that whole cycle again, you know, that adaptation to what's in front of you. And they used to say to me, "Never go the same place twice. So look for a new role. Look for something that's going to stretch you. Apply for something that you think you can't do," you know, which I did that a couple of times, you know, and And then where I thought I have no chance of getting this role, the interview for the role, you know, that's where I really, you know, managed to get my hands on the role. So I was lucky I got promoted at the first shout every time. And I think that's as a consequence of being motivated, having career aspirations, and potentially taking in these broadening roles all the time, you know, learning from them. So some of the roles I've had were your usual kind of general physical training roles, and then running physical training teams, and then doing things like going to the Brecon Beacons, becoming the chief staff instructor, you know, for outdoor leadership for 3 years. That was an incredibly challenging role, but also incredibly brilliant, you know, the experience that you gain from that. I mean, within that, you know, I had a training team of 14 then. So developing those guys as not just, you know, outdoor ed specialists, but as good blokes, you know, as good men, good sailors and Marines, and really honing in on things like values, you know, and stuff like this, and cascading that to anyone that crossed our door, you know, for training. I also had some policy jobs. And whilst normally people would run away from these, you know, like there's no tomorrow, I actually embraced it because I thought to myself, I'm going to learn so much with this. So one of my policy jobs was fantastic, actually. So it was running adventurous training for the Navy and the Marines. So you're responsible for the network of defence attachés and British embassies, you know, for any overseas expedition that can go on. You're responsible for basically clearing 9 different activities, you know, for any expedition, whether it's in the UK or overseas again. And we had things like, I'll give you an example of how that can just really broaden you as well. So we had a guy called Captain Sean Chappell, Royal Marines, and he decided in the same year he was going to go to the North Pole and the South Pole. And I remember when he came in, so we used to run these things called high risk and remote conferences. So Sean Chappell had to come in and go through one of these. And I remember reading his case for, you know, going to North Pole and South Pole, and it's costly. And I thought, no chance, you know, he'll never get this through. You know, there's no way that this will get through. And then he gave this presentation. He linked it to children, education, PR for the Navy and Marines and wider. How he was going to, you know, teach kids along the way with this, you know, that we're going to follow his journey via satellite and everything. And I just thought, this is incredible. Like, how do I get involved? You know, so to do like a bipolar exped, you know, was unbelievable. You know, so there's things like that came along that are really different, you know. And then I ended up in probably the two of the biggest roles is, one is a training officer at the PT school. So you run the school, basically. That was a fantastic role. And then the other one is the specialisation advisor. So you are the advisor to foreign captain and the rest of the Navy, really, basically, from there. That role is incredible, you know, because you've got reach in that role. You know, I'd sat on Second Sea Lord's personal executive group, all sorts of forums, you know, that ordinarily you wouldn't have, you know, you wouldn't have been involved in.
Wow, that's really interesting. Some of that I didn't realise, actually. Some of the stuff, the extent that you have been involved with. I could talk to you for hours about sort of your experiences in the Navy, and I just find it really fascinating, some of the stuff you've done, which we aren't going to fit in this podcast. So maybe we do something a bit later on, Wayne, because there's some real good stuff and that I'd like to link in there. But we'll come back to it at another time. But just so, I guess, just finishing with the Navy, what did you enjoy most about the Navy, would you say?
I think, what I enjoy most about Fairways is people, you know. So a lot of people won't know this, but the Royal Navy is probably the biggest children's home in the UK. You know, so so there's a lot of you get a lot of. Well, I was at HMS Raleigh for 4 years in recruit training, you know, and I had a large team down there at the time, and we really did revolutionise initial recruit training, you know, and And I think one of the biggest things was around the way we spoke to recruits that came through the door and looked at them differently. And you know, I think one of my things was like, I really want us to care for these people. You know, I want to be compassionate to what they're going through. Not just, you know, it's not about you walking around in a white vest, you know, pumping your chest and your biceps out. And that shift had a massive change on a lot of people. You know, when I was saying to people like, you know, what you leave from here is you leave that, you will always be, if you get this right, for 70 recruits, they will always talk about you as a role model. You know, so things like that was a huge shift. So probably the thing that I love the most about the Navy is people. Even to this day, I'm still in touch with so many people that I serve with. And I think, and it segues into Fairways, it's one of the reasons I joined Fairways, because I think this focus on people, you know, that really lit me up from the start. That lit my synapses, like, you know, so.
Yeah, and that's so interesting when you talk about that, because I'm just trying to link back, because something you're exceptionally good at and it's something that you're really passionate about, what in Fairways is around leadership and coaching and mentoring our leaders and our staff, but most importantly, you really make time for people. And I'm just trying to think, when you spoke about the Navy early, you mentioned them two gentlemen that took you under your wing at 19. I can see like how you do that with people, and yeah. I just wondered sort of like that, you know, for you to say that about in HMS Rally and taking over the recruits, and because there is that sort of perception that, you know, they walk around, pump their chest out.
Yeah.
But
yeah.
For you to say, you know, you want them to, you know, you care about them and you want them to leave and look back and go, actually, that was a real role model in my life. Where does that come from you, do you think? What is, installs that?
I don't know, actually. Do you know where it possibly could come from is, like, when I was growing up, you know, like we grew up in a coal mining, you know, town. So that was serious times, because it was in, you know, it was the miner strikes. So you had a lot of people in the town I grew up in, you know, families in strife, families at war, families that didn't work for an extended period of time. We were getting like Russian food parcels sent across, you know, really? Imagine that. Jeez. You know, yeah. And then like my rugby coach at the time, he's not with us any longer, you know, he's a really big influence on me, and he was a miner, and or he, you know, striking miner, and he used to say to me and some of my mates, you fancy making a nuisance of yourself on the picket lines for a couple of bob? and obviously I, you know, Gareth, you know me very well. I am a colourful character. I can be quite a nuisance. Certainly, if you're paying me, I can be, you know. But I guess what I'm trying to describe is like how everybody looked out for each other. Like families looked after families. You know, like the club became this focal point for the whole community. And also, growing up in a working class town and playing in a working class rugby league club as well. That's the focal point of the community. It's all about community, you know. So I think the people thing, you know, may have come from there, as well as my family, you know, and, you know, like my grandparents and like my uncles and aunties and whatnot. And yeah.
Okay, interesting. Thanks for sharing that. So how did Fairways come about then? So let's get to that. Yeah. So that's quite a different story.
It is. So Mac, who is the CEO, Matt McHugh. So we go back a good few years. I probably never talked about this to too many people, actually. not actually sure I should do
it
right now.
We can't edit this way.
Okay. Mike was one of my recruits in training, and he was just, he was a nightmare.
Yeah.
He was, you know what he's like. I say I'm colourful and I can be a nuisance, you know, that's like, that's Mike McHugh on steroids, you know. Yeah, yeah. But he was one of the recruits that just I can even remember the name of his intake. It was Kelly 51s. We were at HMS Mercury. I remember stepping on the gym floor for the first time, and he's got that little glint in his eye.
Sorry, what year would that have been roughly?
That would have been, well, Mac was about 17 then, I think. So I would have been, that could have been 92, maybe 93.
Just rolled off your tongue then, you remembered all of that.
Yeah. If you've ever been in the Navy, you remember your years, you know. Yeah, yeah. So I left HMS Amazon in 91, went to Mercury in 92, 93, went to Runfield in 93 for Portsmouth. And then, so it must have been around the 92 era, I think. And then Mac, he just had something. And it was because he's a colourful character, and because you know he's because he's the size he is as well. He's like a little pocket rocket, and I just thought to myself, he's going to get himself in a lot of trouble if he's not careful.
Yeah.
So I operated as a human shield through recruit training, phase two recruit training for him, and we just became good friends since then, and I've always stayed close to, you know, Mac's career and whatnot. And then when Mac decided to leave, you know, we'd always been in touch, and I was always really proud of, you know, the work he was doing and with Cornerstone and then into Fairways. And he kept saying to me, our paths will cross, you know, come on, we've got to work together again, you know. And then I'd left the service, and then what's the best way to describe this? So I was working with like elite police forces, special forces units, based around building training facilities and building training and ideas around training, and looking at the physiological aspects of making them more effective on task. And I was in Abu Dhabi at the time. I'd just been to this trade show, and I was meeting up with this. A guy that worked for the Sultan of Dubai, basically, to look at some training. And then I got a text message from Mac. And I remember thinking to myself, I'd left the Navy to be at home with my family more, because I've got a beautiful family, you know, three girls. And I suddenly found, for that first 2 years, I was probably away more than I was when I was in the Navy. And I think Mac caught me at a time when I was away and just about to go to, we were looking at doing some work in Israel after that. And then obviously I don't really want to be in Israel because it's too close to Syria as well. And Israel's got its own problems today, you know. So I found myself in a situation where I was away from home so much, and I'd reversed what my intention was for leaving. And then we started a conversation about Fairways, and yeah, it kind of went from there.
The rest is history.
Yeah, the rest is history, so they say, yeah.
So you joined as, like I said, a director. You used your various skills that you've picked up in your career in the Navy. Then you come over and started to run HR and our training facilities. And then, I guess, like I said, sort of at the start of the podcast, you've done a variety of different roles and supported and developed lots of different areas of the organisation, the charity now. But currently you are the Director of Talent and Performance.
Yeah.
So what's that way? What do you actually do? Just so people understand what your role is.
So, yeah, talent and performance is an area that I absolutely love, you know. So we're in the process at the moment of rewriting, you know, the whole talent management framework around Fairways. So we were going great guns until the pandemic arrived, and then, you know, we lost some staff. We also then decided to then do a deep research piece of work around what good looks like, you know, how we could further develop this and infuse it with things like neuroscience and everything else. All that work's done, and it's really it's looking at, I would say, pathways really. So someone joins the organisation. And Gareth, you're a good example of this. How do they do what you did, but with purpose? So how do they get from a support worker to the MD, you know, in their career? And along that journey, we've just kind of fashioned out a series of different leadership programs, operational management programs as well, which would sit and support around that. So you've got like this leadership development, which, you know, I don't think there's a great deal of leadership development in this area, to be honest, in this sector. So to do that and do that with purpose and make it really meaningful, and make it close up as well to our trauma-informed practices and our RISE program, and using language that's similar, so we kind of, you know, mix one on top of the other and integrate this stuff. And yeah, the whole premise there is to be able to develop pathways within Fairways that somebody can join and then go on to have a long and illustrious career, you know, specialise in certain areas, and just achieve what we've set out as a vision and mission.
Yeah, yeah. And your department yourself, you're involved in so much, aren't you? And
yeah.
You've got quite a privileged role in terms of you get to meet everyone across the organisation, every department, every service. Your team deliver all the core training, they deliver all the specialist training, you deliver all the leadership and the management programmes. You developed and you implemented RISE, which is a fantastic therapeutic intervention programme to support young people and staff. You work on the model of care, you do mentoring and coaching for different, so you touch on lots of different functions, don't you?
Yeah, I'm very lucky in that respect, you know, where I yeah, it seems like whole Fairways, system, you know, touch on the whole system. And part of developing the model of care is to be able to do that, is to bring people together. You know, we've got a core group of five or six, and then we've got a wider steering group, so every service within Fairways, you know. And I remember when we first sat together, you know, we were talking about developing this model that would span all of our services. And we had people sat around the table that were looking at me going, this can't be done, you know, offering a little bit of friction resistance as to why. But even that's one of the most important things about Fairways, and I'll use that word community as well. It's that one community that we need at Fairways, that team of teams. And it's to be able to lift people out of their silos and get them to think bigger.
Yeah.
You know, and when we do that, we start to achieve, turn the cogs and keys in the ignition, you know, fire the engine up, and we start to move forwards towards where you want us to go.
Definitely. So. No, I agree, 100%. Okay, so what's your why? What gets you out of bed in the morning? What drives you?
I would say, do you know what, my deep, deep why is my family. You know, that they drive me. I'm really lucky. I've got three incredible daughters, but, you know, my wife as well, she's a major driving force, you know, in our house, in our family. And I think without her constant, you know, kind of drive behind me personally, I think I'd probably maybe slow down at times, and there's potential to take your eye off the prize, but not with Hannah, you know. So I'm really thankful of that, and I think from that what grows from that is what I'm passionate about is people, you know. So I would say my why is around helping people realize the potential, but then really supporting them closely to release that over time, you know. And I think we've been really lucky with some of the people we had at Fairways. You know, we have got some incredible people, and you can see the journey they've been on over the last few years and whatnot, to get on that journey with them together, and also like put them in stretch as well. You know, that's really important to do that. You know, in those moments, you know, where they don't know, they've got to go away and do a bit of soul searching and find out and come back again. I don't want to leave them for too long, you know. So we do that, and then I think that's my why.
Yeah, I would agree with that. I definitely witness that all the time from you, about you believing in people and seeing their potential and pushing them to reach their potential. Absolutely. So, and we talk about like our 5-year strategy, our 5-year breakthrough objectives. I know one of the key one for us, which you're taking the lead on, is us being trauma informed and what that looks like. So what's the couple of areas that, you know, objectives you want to achieve probably in the next few years?
Well, starting on Thursday, actually, we've got our 3-year recertification with Build and Restraint Reduction Network, so it'd be great to successfully get through the panel there. Lucy Pierce and Mandy Priestley will be heading that up. They've done a great job so far. And I think for Fairways, I think from a trauma-informed perspective, I think it's about continuing to innovate, continuing to be creative, do things in a different way, look through a different lens. You know, we've done this with Build, and Build have allowed us to change stuff, you know, to play around with stuff, and to, you know, and like one of the things we'll take towards the panel on Thursday will be some case studies around lived experience, you know, from a Fairways perspective, which they're mind-blowing. You know, the work that's been done in them, they're just phenomenal. And I think this is unbuild-like, you know, the work that we're doing. I think the model of care, being able to create that, then implement it, then establish it, and then in time improve it once again. And I think we are learning so much from our work with Patrick Tomlinson along this, who's the consultant who's supporting us on the model of care. One of the things that's changing hugely, I don't know if you noticed this, but is the language of the people in Fairways. I think this last 3 years, I sat in the refresher programs this year, you know, because we don't just, people don't just turn up and then do our foundational 5-day RISE program. You know, we bring them back each year, we test them. We also assess them, you know, on the initial program. And then they get an opportunity to develop in different areas like DDP, you know, attachment focus group work, you know, stuff like this. NVR, you know, etc. And so being able to really keep all of that in motion, always going back and underneath as well to go, is what we're doing okay? Could we do it better? You know, who needs extras? Who's the people who's got true potential? Like, get close to them. What's your career aspirations if you've got potential? You know, if you are a real go-getter, you know. But sometimes we also have people. I was chatting to one on Sunday morning, actually. I've been to the gym Sunday morning, and I bump into him now and again outside Costa in Waterlooville. And I said, do you remember, like, 5 years ago, you were saying, I'm not interested in going any higher or further, etc. And he's, you know, he's done a great job. He's just done a fantastic job at Porchester Road. And everything's changed. So it's been able to, helping him realise that he didn't even realise, you know, 5 years ago. And putting people on a different path, you know, on a different trajectory, you know.
Definitely, and it's exciting, isn't it? The model of care that we've got, and RISE, you know, I truly believe, you know, probably, you know, like to think they're industry leading, and I think we're on a great journey, aren't we?
Yeah.
It's exciting to see what the future holds, definitely.
Yeah.
So we talk in Fairways a lot about our values, playing your part, being a professional, accepting, transparent and reflective. and our core values, but I can say this to everyone, if you was a stick of rock and I was to break you in half, what's the values that run through you, Wayne, would you say?
I would say commitment,
accountability.
I'd say this is possibly an attribute rather than a value, but it'd be perseverance. I don't give up on too much, you know.
It's true.
I am actually learning to give up at times, because that can also be a disadvantage as well as an advantage. Yeah. Integrity is massive with me. Like, so basically, you know, don't say you're going to do something and not do something, because that just gets me chasing you, you know. Don't lie. Just, you know, be honest. You know, that's one I've really learned, you know, from my wife as well, you know. She drives that in our household. And I've actually, some of the stuff I've learned at Fairways in this last 8 years, I should thank Fairways for, because as a consequence of it, I'm a better dad, I'm hopefully a better husband, I'm a better friend, a better colleague, you know, etc. And I don't think I would have picked that stuff up if I was anywhere else in the world.
That's really nice to hear.
It's true.
It is. Very good. Thank you. So on my podcast, I like to finish with a generic question. So my question to you, Wayne, is obviously all the complexities and the chaos of everyday life, we know it impacts on our own mental health and our well-being. So my question to you is, what do you do for your own well-being, or what do you recommend to people?
Anything that's kind of health related. So I probably work out too much, you know. So I sometimes overdo it. Like this morning, for instance, I overdid it. And going to the gym, working out, but it's not just working out. Like I love functional training. So I train with my feet on the ground more than machines. You know, I'll train movements of everyday living rather than a pec deck, for instance. I mean, what even is a pec deck?
Yeah, they still do them.
Yeah, yeah, yeah. So stuff like that. I love lifting. So anything that involves the best exercise of all time, the golden exercise is the squat. So anything that involves front squat, back squat, single leg squat, stuff like that, you know, I do. But as I've got older, I've learned to also do more mobility work. So I do more movement work. You know, I learned that from two absolutely top guys, Dan Cleal and Mark Jones. And I think that's one of the things, as you get older, you lose your range of movement really quickly and you lose strength. So I'm constantly working on those two areas relentlessly. So things like yoga, for instance, is fantastic.
Yeah, yeah.
Something I've got into a lot recently is breathing and breath work. We've got our manager's way day on the 24th, and yeah, we're using Dan Hughes from Vita V, who's coming in. So that's a 2.5 hour breath work masterclass. Excellent. You know, which
just
will be
out of secret there.
Oh, have I? Just edit that bit. So breath work and yeah, anything that involves health, really. Yeah. I guess like one of the areas I'd love to improve on would be what I eat. You know, because sometimes I'll just eat anything. and as you get older, that's not always, you know, that advantageous to be able to do that.
Okay.
Yeah.
Thank you. So health, yeah. So. Exercise, yoga, I like that breath work as well.
Yeah.
Brilliant, thanks Wayne. Just before we go, I do want to circle back because
yeah,
I mentioned at the start, I know rugby has been a massive part of your life and something you're really passionate about. You've mentioned that a few times. And you've got an MBE?
Oh, I have, yeah.
So talk to me a little bit about that just before we close.
So I got awarded the MBE in 2006 and it was kind of twofold, really. So there's some job-related stuff around in adventurous training. I'd basically set up a mentoring group, and we had, I think it was close to about sort of 20 or so adventurous people interested in adventurous training. And then over a period of 3 years, being able to take their skills higher and further. And then I wrote a paper which I went all the way up to the Navy Board, which was to basically create adventurous training instructors and then use this as part of our developing our moral component of operational capability, you know, so developing resilience and whatnot, using the outdoors as a huge medium to be able to do this. And yeah, it involved the Navy basically commissioning a load of money to pay for this cadre of people. So the next step was then to build the courses to train them, you know, etc. So there was that bit, but the biggest bit was with rugby league. So I was down the Falkland, I don't know, Falklands, I was in Australia in 1994, and I'd noticed that the British Army and the Royal Air Force were going to play the Australian Defence Force in France as a curtain raiser for France versus Australia. So I came back to UK going, Why have we never played rugby league? You know, so I went into the Navy Rugby Union office, and when you think about your sense of purpose in life, you know, one of the senior officers said to me, I said, like, oh, what steps has the Navy taken to facilitate the game of rugby league? And he went, Wayne, didn't even look up. He said, better men than you have tried and failed. I was like, sorry. And that one line drove me for the next 15 years. So we went out then, so I got to Parliament. I got a friend of mine who was an MP to ask a question in Parliament, which then went all the way to, I think, Michael Portillo was the Secretary of State for Defence at the time. So it went all the way up to, you know, he asked this question in the House with the Speaker, and it came all the way back down again to this senior officer ringing me and going, through gritted teeth, I've got to support you, you know. So I actually said to him, thank you, I think we'll be all right. We don't need your support, we're going to do it our own way. And we did. 10 years later, we won the Armed Forces World Cup in Australia. With UK Armed Forces and Navy. Today, I heard this recently where a great rugby league coach said, don't look at what coach has done till he's 5 years out of tenure. He went, then look at the last 5 years of whether the club's been successful or not.
Yeah, yeah.
And the Navy today, the number one team in, the Navy Rugby League is the number one team in the Navy. UK Armed Forces are just getting revved up again, and I think there'll be another, World Cup in Australia looming, if they play the cards right. I then got involved with a number of teams outside of the services, and it culminated in me coaching Wales under 16s, Wales A. I was assistant coach for the national squad, and ran a series of performance camps for the likes of, well, Rugby Union as well, so for the likes of Harlequins, London Broncos, Bristol, just to name a few, involved with a few clubs up north as well. Rugby league clubs are professional clubs, and always kept my hand in with that. And even today, I work closely with a good friend of mine in Australia, a guy called Ben Watkins, and we were always just poring over analysis of the different clubs, why they've done stuff like. And interestingly, I've not said this out loud before. I think I might mention this to you, Gareth, but taking stuff from the Penrith Panthers, which we have been very close to over the last few years, on their pathway systems, and applying some of that methodology to fairways, it's incredible. It works, it's transferable, it's really exciting, and I think when we start to do this in the very near future, it can have great impact as well,
Watch your space then.
Watch your space indeed, yeah.
Well, that's amazing. I didn't know some of that. That's really interesting. What an achievement. Well done, really good.
Yeah,
really
thank
good.
You.
Yeah. Okay, well, that's been really insightful, Wayne. I appreciate you. Your time today.
I enjoyed it.
And we'll catch up soon. From this, there's a few other areas I want to go into a bit deeper, so we'll get together again. But thanks for your time.
Thank you.
Thanks, everyone, for listening. Goodbye.